to Grandpa's chair, but the boy still wanted to explore the house, so with a weary sigh, I accompanied him on a check of the shower curtains. Finally, he returned to Mom's room. He worked the doorknob, and then he dragged her dresser over in front of the door. He set the rifle down next to the bed and called me up to lie with him. When he clung to me, I was reminded of how he sometimes came out to the doghouse in the garage when Mom and Dad were shouting. He felt full of the same lonely terror. I licked him as comfortingly as I knew how. We were together. How could anything be wrong? The next morning, we slept in, and then had a fabulous breakfast. I ate toast crusts and licked scrambled eggs and finished his milk for him. What a great day! Ethan put more food in a bag, along with a bottle that he filled with water, and slid the whole thing in his backpack. Were we going for a walk? Sometimes Ethan and I would go for a walk, and he'd take sandwiches for us to share. Lately, his walks always seemed to take us down by where the girl lived. I could smell her scent on the mailbox. The boy would stand and look at the house, and then we'd turn around and go back home. The fear from the night before was totally gone. Whistling, the boy went out to take care of Flair, who wandered over to eat the bucket of dry, tasteless seeds, or whatever they were that she munched on when she wasn't trying to make herself sick with grass. I was surprised, though, when the boy fetched a blanket and a shiny leather saddle from the barn and affixed them to the horse's back. We'd done this a few times before, with Ethan climbing up to sit high on Flair's back, but always with Grandpa there, and always with the gate to Flair's yard firmly closed. Now, though, the boy opened the gate, hoisting himself up with a grin. "Let's go, Bailey," he called down to me. I followed, feeling surly. I didn't like that Flair suddenly was getting all the attention, and that I was so far away from the boy, forced to walk beside the huge creature, who I had come to conclude was just as dumb as the ducks. I especially didn't appreciate it when, with a flick of her tail, Flair dropped a smelly pile of poo on the road, narrowly missing me. I lifted my leg on it, because it now, after all, belonged to me. But I felt fairly certain the horse had meant the thing as an insult. Soon we were off-road, in the woods, walking along a trail. I chased down a rabbit and would have caught it if it hadn't cheated by suddenly changing direction. I smelled more than one skunk and haughtily refused to take even a single step in that direction. We stopped at a small pool, and Flair and I drank, and later the boy ate his sandwich, tossing me the crusts. "Isn't this great, Bailey? Are you having a good time?" I watched his hands, wondering if his questioning tone indicated he was going to feed me more sandwich. Aside from the fact that we had Flair with us, I was really enjoying myself. Of course, just getting away from the stupid flip was reason in and of itself to celebrate, but after several hours we were so far from home, I could no longer smell any sign of it. I could tell that Flair was getting weary, but from the boy's attitude I concluded we still had a way to go to reach our destination. At one point Ethan said, "Do we go this way or that way? Do you remember, Bailey? Do you know where we are?" I looked up at him expectantly, and after a moment we continued on, picking up a trail that had many, many animal scents on it. I'd marked so much territory, my leg was sore from being lifted into the air. Flair stopped and let loose with a huge gush of urine, which I felt was entirely inappropriate behavior, since her scent would obliterate mine, and I was the dog. I wandered up ahead to clear the smell from my nose. I topped a small rise, and that's when I saw the snake. It was coiled in a patch of sun, sticking its tongue out rhythmically, and I stopped dead, fascinated. I'd never seen one before. I barked, which caused no reaction whatsoever. I trotted back to the boy, who had Flair underway again. "What is it, Bailey? What did you see?" I decided that whatever the boy was saying, It wasn't go bite the snake. I slid in next to Flair, who was plodding along expressionlessly, and wondered how she would react when she saw the snake curled up in front of her. At first she didn't see it, but then, as she approached, the snake suddenly pulled back, lifting its head, and that's when Flair screamed. Her front legs came off the ground, and she spun, kicking, and the boy went flying off her back. I ran to him at once, of course, but he was okay. He jumped to his feet. "Flair!" he shouted. I watched sourly as the horse retreated at a full gallop, her hooves pounding the dirt. When the boy took off running, I understood what was needed and ran ahead in hot pursuit. But the horse kept going, and soon the gap between me and my boy was too great, and I turned back to be with him. "Oh, no," the boy was saying. But the no wasn't for me. "Oh, God, what are we going to do, Bailey?" To my utter dismay, the boy started crying. He did this less and less as he had gotten older, which made it all the more upsetting now. I could feel his utter despair, and I shoved my face into his hands, trying to comfort him. The best thing, I decided, would be for us to go home and eat more chicken. The boy eventually stopped crying, looking blankly around the woods. "We're lost, Bailey." He took a drink of water. "Well, okay. Come on." Apparently, the walk wasn't over, because we set out in an entirely new direction, not at all the way from which we'd come. We went a long way into the woods, at one point crossing our own scent, and still the boy plodded on. I grew so weary that when a squirrel darted out right in front of me, I didn't even bother to chase it. I just followed the boy, who I could tell was also getting tired. When the light began to fade from the sky, we sat down on a log, and he ate the last of the sandwiches, carefully feeding me a hunk. "I'm really sorry, Bailey." Just before dark, the boy became interested in sticks. He began dragging sticks over to a tree that had blown over, stacking them up against the wall of mud and gnarly roots. He piled pine needles on the ground underneath this canopy and stacked more sticks on top. I watched, curiously, ready, despite my fatigue, to chase one if he threw it. But he just stayed focused on his task. When it became too dark to see, he climbed in on the pine needles. "Here, Bailey, come here." I crawled in beside him. It reminded me of the doghouse. I ruefully remembered Grandpa's chair, wondering why we couldn't just go home and sleep there. But the boy soon started to shiver, and I put my head on top of him and eased my belly onto his back the way I used to lie on my brothers and sisters when we were cold. "Good dog, Bailey," he told me. Soon his breathing became deep, and he stopped shivering. Though I wasn't exactly perfectly comfortable, I carefully lay in a position to keep him warm as possible through the night. We were up when the birds started to call, and before it was even fully light, we were already walking again. I sniffed hopefully at the sack, fooled by the smells, but when the boy let me put my head inside, I found nothing to eat. "We'll save it in case we need to make a fire," he told me. I translated this to mean, "We need more sandwiches," and thumped my tail in agreement. The nature of our adventure changed that day. The hunger in my belly grew to be a sharp pain, and the boy cried again, sniffling for about an hour. I could feel anxiety wafting through him, followed by a sullen, lethargic apathy that I found just as alarming. When he sat down and stared at me with glassy eyes, I licked him full in the face. I was worried about my boy. We needed to go home, now. We came to a small stream, and the boy flopped down on his stomach, and we drank thirstily. The water gave the boy both energy and purpose. When we set off again, we were following the stream. which twisted and turned through the trees, and at one point through a meadow full of singing bugs. The boy turned his face to the sun and increased his pace, hope surging through him. But his shoulders slumped when, after an hour or so, the stream re-entered the dark woods. We spent that night clinging to each other as before. I smelled a carcass nearby, something old but probably edible, but I didn't leave the boy. He needed my warmth more than ever. His strength was leaving him. I could feel it ebbing away. I had never been so afraid. The next day, the boy stumbled a few times while he walked. I smelled blood. His face had been whipped by a branch. I sniffed at it. "Go away, Bailey," he yelled at me. I felt anger and fear and pain coming from him, but I didn't back away. I stayed right there and knew I had done the right thing when he buried his face in my neck and cried some more.
"We're lost, Bailey. I'm so sorry," the boy whispered.
I wagged at my name. The little stream wandered into a boggy area, losing all definition and making for mucky travels. The boy sank up to his calves so that his feet made a sucking sound as he pulled them out. Bugs descended on us, landing in our eyes and ears. Midway across the swamp, the boy just stopped. His shoulders sagged, his chin dropping. The air left his lungs in a long, deep sigh. Distressed, I picked my way across the slimy area as quickly as I could, putting a paw on his leg. He was giving up. An overwhelming sense of defeat was building within him, and he was surrendering to it. He was losing his very will to live. He was like my brother Hungry, lying down that last time in the culvert, never to get back up again. I barked, startling both the boy and me. His dull eyes blinked at me. I barked again. "Okay," he muttered. Lethargically, he drew his foot out of the mud and tentatively set it down, sinking again. It took us more than half the day to cross that swamp. When we picked up the stream on the other side of the bog, it moved water with more purpose, becoming deeper and faster. Soon another trickle joined it, and then another, so that the boy had to make a running start to leap across it when a downed tree blocked his path on one side or another. Each leap seemed to make him tired, and we wound up taking a nap for a few hours. I lay with him, terrified the boy wouldn't wake up, but he did, rousing himself slowly.
"You're a good dog, Bailey,"
he told me, his voice hoarse. It was late in the afternoon when the stream joined a river. The boy stood and looked blankly at the dark water for a long time, then aimed us downstream, pushing through grasses and thickly choked trees. Night was starting to fall when I picked up the scent of men. At this point, Ethan seemed to be walking without purpose, his feet scuffling numbly in the dirt. Each time he fell, he took longer and longer to get back up, and he registered nothing when I darted ahead, my nose to the ground.
"Come on, Bailey," he mumbled. "Where are you going?"
I think he didn't even notice when we crossed the footpath. He was squinting in the fading light, trying to keep from tripping, and I sensed nothing from him for several seconds when the grasses underfoot became a well-trod trail of dirt. I could smell several different men, all of them old scents, but as clear to me as the track of children up and down the streets back home. Then, suddenly, the boy straightened, taking in a breath.
"Hey,"
he said softly, his gaze sharpening on the path. Now that I had a firm sense of where we were going, I trotted on ahead a few yards, my fatigue lifting with the boy's rising excitement. Both the trail and the river were bending in parallel to the right, and I kept my nose down, noticing how the man smell was becoming both more strong and more recent. Someone had been here not long ago. Ethan stopped, so I went back to him. He was standing, staring, his mouth open. "Wow," he said. I realized there was a bridge across the river, and as I watched, a figure broke out of the gloom and walked along the railing, peering at the water. Ethan's heart rate ticked up. I could hear it. His excitement, though, faded into a fear, and he shrank back, reminding me of my first mother's reaction when we would come across men while we were hunting. "Bailey, be quiet," he whispered. I didn't know what was going on, but I sensed his mood. It was the same thing that had happened at home the night he got the gun out and poked it into all the closets. I looked at him alertly. "Hey!" the man on the bridge called. I felt the boy stiffen, getting ready to run away. "Hey!" the man shouted again. "Are you Ethan?"
Chapter 12.
The man on the bridge gave us a car ride.
"We've been searching the whole state of Michigan for you, son," he said.
Ethan looked down, and from him I sensed sadness and shame and a little fear. We drove to a big building, and as soon as we stopped, Dad opened the car door, and he and Mom hugged Ethan, and Grandma and Grandpa were there, and everyone was happy, though there were no dog treats of any kind. The boy sat in a chair with wheels, and a man pushed him into the building, and just before he went inside, the boy turned and waved at me, and I thought he would probably be okay, though I felt pretty anxious to be separated from him. Grandpa held tight to my collar, so I didn't have any choice in the matter. Grandpa took me for a car ride, and I was a front-seat dog. We went to a place where they handed Grandpa a delicious-smelling sack through his window, and he fed me dinner right there in the car, unwrapping hot sandwiches and handing them to me one at a time. He ate one, too.
"Don't tell Grandma about this," he said.
When we got home, I was startled to see Flair standing in her usual place in her yard, regarding me with a slack expression. I barked at her through the window until Grandpa told me to stop barking. The boy was only gone one night, but it was the first time since we'd been together that I had slept without him, and I paced the hallway until Dad shouted, "Lie down, Bailey!" I curled up in Ethan's bed and fell asleep, with my head on the pillow, where his scent was the strongest. When Mom brought Ethan home the next day, I was overjoyed. But the boy's mood was somber. Dad told him he was a bad boy. Grandpa talked to him in front of the gun cabinet. Everyone was tense, and yet nobody so much as mentioned the name Flair, and it was Flair who was the cause of the whole thing. I realized that because no one else had been there, they didn't know what had really happened, and were mad at the boy instead of the horse. I was angry enough to go outside and bite that horse, but I didn't, of course, because the thing was huge. The girl came over to see the boy, and the two of them sat on the porch and didn't talk much, just sort of mumbled and looked away from each other.
"Were you scared?" the girl asked.
"No," the boy said.
"I would have been scared."
"Well, I wasn't."
"Did you get cold at night?" she pressed.
"Yeah, pretty much."
"Oh."
"Yeah." I alertly followed this exchange, sifting carefully for words such as Bailey, car ride, and treats. Hearing none of them, I put my head down and sighed. The girl reached down and petted me, so I rolled on my back for a tummy rub. I decided I liked the girl and wished she visited more often and brought more of those biscuits and gave me some. Then, before I was ready, Mom packed and we took the big, long car ride that meant school was coming. When we pulled in the driveway at home, several of the children came running over, and Marshmallow and I got reacquainted on the lawn, slipping right into our ongoing wrestling match. There were other dogs in the neighborhood, but I liked Marshmallow the best, probably because I saw her nearly every day when the boy went to stay with Chelsea's mother after school. Often when I would head out through the open gate on an adventure, Marshmallow would be out too and would accompany me while we explored the issue of other people's trash cans. So I was alarmed to hear Chelsea leaning out of her mother's car one day, calling, "Marshmallow! Marshy, here, Marshmallow!" Chelsea came over to talk to Ethan, and before long, all the kids in the neighborhood were calling Marshmallow's name. It was clear to me that Marshmallow had been a bad dog and had gone off somewhere on her own adventure. Her scent was most recent in the area of the creek, but there were so many children and dogs, I didn't have a good sense of what direction she'd taken. Chelsea was sad and cried, and I felt bad for her and put my head in her lap, and she hugged me. Todd was one of the children who were helping to look for Marshmallow, and curiously her scent was on his pants. I sniffed him carefully, and he frowned and pushed my head away. His shoes were muddy, and Marshmallow's scent was strong there, too, plus other things I couldn't identify. "Come on, Bailey," Ethan said when he saw Todd's reaction to my examination. Marshmallow never did come home. I remembered my first mother running out the gate and into the world without a look back. Some dogs just want to be free to wander because they don't have a boy who loves them. Eventually, Marshmallow's scent faded from the wind, but I never seemed to stop sniffing for her. When I remembered playing with Marshmallow, I found myself thinking of Coco back in the yard. I would have loved to see Coco again, and Marshmallow, but I was beginning to understand that life was far more complicated than it had appeared to be in the yard, and that it was people who were in charge of it, not dogs. What mattered was not what I wanted. What mattered was that I was there in the woods when Ethan was cold and hungry, keeping him warm at nights, being his companion. That winter, around the time when Dad put a tree in the living room for Merry Christmas, Chelsea got a new puppy. They named her Duchess. She was relentlessly playful, to the point where I'd get annoyed at her sharp teeth digging into my ears, and would give her a quick growl to make her stop. She'd blink at me innocently and back off for just a few seconds before deciding I couldn't have meant it, and then she'd come right back at me. It was very irritating. In the spring, the word go-kart swept through the neighborhood, and all up and down the street, the children were sawing and hammering on wood, totally ignoring their dogs. Dad would come out to the garage every evening and talk to the boy while he fussed over whatever he was doing. I even went so far as to go into the boy's closet and bring out the loathsome Flip, thinking I could tantalize him with that, but he remained totally focused on playing with pieces of wood that he never once threw for me to chase and bring back. "See my go-kart, Bailey? It's going to go fast." Finally, the boy opened the garage door, sat on the go-kart, and rode it like a sled down the short driveway. I trotted beside him, thinking we'd both been through a lot of bother for such a pointless ending. But when the go-kart reached the bottom of the driveway, he picked it up and carried it back into the garage to play with it some more. At least with the Flip, you had something you could chew on. On a sunny day when there was no school, all of the kids in the neighborhood took their go-karts to a long, steep street several blocks away. Duchess was too young to accompany the procession, but I went along with my boy, though I had no enthusiasm for his initial idea that he should sit in the go-kart and I should pull him down the street by a leash. Todd and his older brother Drake were among the kids and laughed and said things about Chelsea's go-kart, and I could sense that her feelings were hurt. When they lined up the go-karts at the top of the hill, Todd's was next to Ethan's. I was not at all prepared for what happened next. Someone yelled, "Go!" and then the go-karts were off, rolling down the hill, gathering speed. Drake ran up behind Todd and gave his go-kart a big push and it leaped ahead.
"Cheating!" Chelsea yelled.
Her go-kart was moving very slowly, but Ethan's was gaining speed, and soon I had to run to keep up. The other go-karts fell away, and after a little bit it was just Ethan's go-kart steadily closing in on Todd's. I ran with abandonment and exuberant freedom, galloping down the hill after my boy. At the bottom, a boy named Billy stood with a flag on a stick, and I sensed that he was somehow part of what was happening. Ethan was hunched over, his head low, and it was all so much fun, I decided I wanted to be on the go-kart with him. I put on an extra burst of speed and leaped through the air, landing on the back of his go-kart and nearly toppling off again. The force of my impact threw us forward, so that we were now passing Todd. Billy waved his stick, and I could hear yelling and cheering behind us as the go-kart, now on the flat part of the road, rolled to a stop.
"Good dog, Bailey," the boy told me, chuckling.
All the other go-karts rolled up behind us, followed by the rest of the children, who were all yelling and laughing. Billy came over and held Ethan's hand up into the air, dropping his stick with the flag on it. I picked up the stick and pranced around with it, daring someone to try to take it and have some real fun.
"Not fair! Not fair!" Todd shouted.
The crowd of children grew quiet. A hot fury poured off of Todd, who stood facing Ethan.
"The damn dog jumped on the cart. That's why you won. You're disqualified,"
Drake said, standing behind his brother.
"Well, you pushed your brother," Chelsea shouted.
"So?"
"I would have caught you anyway," Ethan said.
"Everyone who says Todd's right, say I," Billy called.
Todd and his brother shouted, "I."
"Everyone who says Ethan won, say nay."
"Nay,"
all the other children shouted. I was so startled at this loud outburst, I dropped my stick. Todd took a step forward and hit Ethan, who ducked and tackled Todd. They both fell to the ground.
"Fight!"
Billy yelled. I started to surge forward to protect my boy, but Chelsea put a firm hand on my collar.
"No, Bailey, stay."
The boys rolled around, the two of them tied together in a tight knot of anger. I twisted around trying to slip my collar, but Chelsea held fast. Frustrated, I barked. Ethan was soon sitting on top of Todd. Both boys were panting.
"You give?" Ethan demanded.
Todd looked away, his eyes squeezed shut. Humiliation and hate wafted off of him in equal amounts. Finally, he nodded. The boys stood up warily, beating at the dirt on their pants. I felt the sudden rage from Drake at the exact moment he lunged forward, slamming Ethan with both hands. Ethan rocked back but didn't fall.
"Come on, Ethan, come on!"
Drake snarled. There was a long pause while Ethan stood looking up at the older boy, and then Billy stepped forward.
"No," Billy said.
"No,"
Chelsea said.
"No,"
some of the other children said.
"No."
Drake looked at us all for a minute, and then he spat on the ground and picked up the go-kart. Without a word, the two brothers walked away.
"Well, we sure showed everybody today, didn't we, Bailey?"
Ethan said to me. Everyone hauled their go-karts to the top of the hill and rolled them back down all day long. Ethan allowed Chelsea to ride his go-kart, since hers had lost a wheel, and she had me ride behind her every time. That night, Ethan was excited at dinner, talking rapidly to Mom and Dad, who smiled as they listened. It took the boy a long time to fall asleep, and after he did so, his restlessness made me slide off the bed and lie on the floor. This meant I wasn't really asleep when I heard a huge crash from downstairs.
"What was that?"
the boy asked me, sitting bolt upright in bed. He jumped down onto the floor as the lights came on in the hallway.
"Ethan, stay in your room,"
Dad told him. He was tense, angry, and afraid. Bailey, come. I obediently eased down the stairs with Dad, who moved cautiously and turned on the lights in the living room.
Who's there?
He asked loudly. Wind blew the curtains on the front window, a window that was normally never opened.
Don't come down with bare feet, Dad shouted.
What is it? Mom asked.
Someone threw a rock through our window. Stay back, Bailey.
I sensed Dad's concern and sniffed around the room at all the glass. On the floor was a rock, little shards of the window clinging to it. When I put my nose to it, I instantly recognized the smell. Todd.
Chapter 13.
A year or so later, in the spring, Smokey the cat got sick. He lay around moaning and didn't protest when I put my nose down in his face to investigate this new behavior. Mom became very worried and took Smokey for a car ride. When Mom came home, she was sad, probably because cats are no fun in a car. A week or so later, Smokey died. After dinner, the family went into the backyard, where Ethan had excavated a big hole, and they wrapped Smokey's body in a blanket and put it in the hole and covered it with dirt. Ethan hammered a piece of wood into the soil next to the mound of wet dirt, and he and Mom cried a little. I nuzzled them both to remind them that there was really no need to grieve, since I was okay and really a much better pet than Smokey ever was. The next day, after Mom and the boy left for school, I went out into the yard and dug Smokey back up, figuring they couldn't have meant to bury a perfectly good dead cat. That summer, we didn't go to the farm at all. Ethan and some friends in the neighborhood would get up every day and go to people's houses and cut grass with loud lawnmowers. The boy would take me along with him, but always tied me to a tree. I loved the smell of the newly cut grass, but I did not care for lawn mowing in general, and felt this activity was somehow involved in us not visiting the farm. Grandpa and Grandma did drive in for a week, but it wasn't nearly as much fun, especially when Dad and Grandpa exchanged some harsh words when they were alone in the backyard, peeling husks off of corn. I felt the anger in both of them, and wondered if it was a reaction to the fact that the corn husks were inedible, something I'd verified by both smelling and chewing. After that day, Dad and Grandpa were very uneasy in each other's company. When school started again, several things were different. The boy no longer went to Chelsea's house when he got home. In fact, he usually was the last one to arrive, smelling of dirt, grass, and sweat as he raced up the driveway after a car dropped him off in the street. And some nights we'd go on a car ride to what I came to understand was a football game, where I would sit on a leash at the end of a long yard next to Mom, and people would yell and scream for no reason. Boys wrestled and threw a ball to each other, sometimes running down close to where I was standing, and other times playing all the way at the far end of the big yard. I could smell Ethan in the group of boys sometimes. It was a little frustrating to just sit there and not go out and enhance the game. At home, I'd learned to get my mouth around a football. One time I was playing with the boy, and I bit too hard, and the football collapsed until it was a saggy, flat wad of leather, sort of like the flip. After that, Ethan didn't want me chewing on footballs, but I was still allowed to play with him as long as I was careful. Mom didn't know this and held me tight by the leash. I knew if she would just let me go get the football, the boys would have a lot more fun chasing me than each other, because I was faster than any of them. Chelsea's puppy Duchess grew up, and we became good friends once I demonstrated to her how she was to behave around me. One day, when the gate was open, I trotted over to see her, and she was wearing a plastic cone around her neck and seemed very out of sorts. She thumped her tail a little when she saw me outside her cage, but she didn't bother to get up. The sight made me uneasy. I hope no one was planning to put one of those things on me again. When it snowed, Ethan and I played with sleds, and when the snow melted, we played with bouncy balls. A couple of times, the boy pulled the flip out of the closet and stared at it while I glanced away in dread. He'd hold it up and look it over, feeling its heft, and then put it away with a sigh. That summer was another one without a farm visit, and once again the boy cut grass with his friends. I would have thought he'd gotten it out of his system, but he apparently still enjoyed it. That year, Dad left for several days, and while he was gone, Grandpa and Grandma visited. Their car smelled like flare and hay and the pond, and I stood and sniffed it for several minutes and raised my legs on the tires.
"My goodness, you are such a big boy," Grandma told Ethan.
There was more football when the days turned cool, plus a wonderful surprise. Ethan could take his own car rides. This changed everything, because now I went almost everywhere with him, my nose out the window as I stood in the front seat, helping him drive. It turned out that the reason he stayed out so late was that he played football every night after school, leaving me tied up by the fence with a dish of water. It was boring, but at least I got to be with the boy. Sometimes, when Ethan took a car ride, he forgot me, so I'd sit in the yard and yip for him to come back. Usually when this happened, Mom would come to see me. "Want to go for a walk, Bailey?" she'd ask over and over, until I was so excited I was dancing around in circles. She'd put the leash on my collar, and we'd patrol the streets, stopping every few feet so I could mark the territory. Often we'd pass groups of children playing, and I'd wonder why Ethan didn't do that as much anymore. Mom sometimes unsnapped the leash and let me run with the children a little bit. I like Mom a lot. My only complaint was that when she exited the bathroom, she would close the lid on my water bowl. Ethan always left the lid up for me. When school ended that summer, Ethan and Mom took us on a car ride to the farm. I was overjoyed to be back. Flair pretended not to recognize me, and I wasn't sure if they were the same ducks or different ones, but everything else seemed exactly the same. Nearly every day, Ethan would work with Grandpa and some men, hammering and sawing boards. I assumed at first that the boy was building another go-kart, but after a month or so, it became clear that they were putting together a new barn right next to the old one, which had a big hole in the roof. I was the first one to spot the woman coming up the driveway and ran down to enforce any needed security. When I got close enough to smell her, I realized it was the girl, all grown up now. She remembered me, and I squirmed in pleasure as she scratched behind my ears. "Hi there, Bailey. Did you miss me? Good dog, Bailey." As the men noticed the girl, they stopped working. Ethan was coming out of the old barn and stopped in surprise. "Oh, hi, Hannah." "Hi, Ethan." Grandpa and the other men were grinning at each other. Ethan looked over his shoulder at them and flushed, then came over to where Hannah and I were standing. "So, hi," he said.
"Hi."
They looked away from each other. Hannah stopped scratching me, and I gave her a little nudge to remind her to keep at it. "Come on in the house," Ethan said. The rest of that summer, whenever I went for a car ride, it smelled like the girl had been sitting in my seat. Sometimes she would come over and have dinner with us, and then she and Ethan would sit on the porch and talk, and I would lie at their feet to give them something interesting to talk about. One time, I was awakened from a well-deserved nap by a little alarm coming off the both of them. They were sitting on the couch, and their faces were really close together, and their hearts were beating, and I could sense fear and excitement. It sounded a little like they were eating, but I couldn't smell any food. Not sure what was happening, I climbed up on the couch and forced my nose into the place where their heads were together. and they both burst out laughing at me. The day Mom and Ethan drove back home for school, the smell of paint from the new barn was in the air, and the girl came over, and she and Ethan went down to the dock and sat with their feet in the water and talked. The girl cried, and they hugged a lot and didn't throw sticks or do any of the things people normally do at a pond, so I wasn't quite sure what was going on. There was more hugging at the car, and then we drove away, Ethan honking. Things were different at home. For one thing, Dad had his own room now, with a new bed in it. He shared the bathroom with Ethan, and frankly, I didn't like to go in there after Dad had been in it. For another, when Ethan wasn't playing football with his friends, he spent a lot of time in his room talking on the phone. He said the name Hannah often during these calls. The leaves were falling from the trees on the day Ethan took me for a car ride to a place with big silver school buses full of people. And there, coming off one of them, was the girl. I don't know who was more happy to see her, me or the boy. I wanted to play with her, but all he wanted to do was hug. I was so excited at this development, I didn't mind that I was automatically a backseat dog for the return trip. Coach says there'll be scouts from U of M and Michigan State tonight to see me, Hannah, the boy said. I understood the word Hannah, of course, but I also picked up a surge of fear and excitement from the boy. From Hannah, there was happiness and pride. I looked out the window to see if I could figure out what was going on, but didn't see anything unusual. That night, I was proud to stand with Hannah while Ethan played football with his friends. I felt fairly certain she had never been to such a place as wonderful as the big yard, and I led her over to where Mom usually took me and showed Hannah where to sit. We'd only been there a little while when Todd came walking up. I hadn't seen much of Todd lately, though his sister Linda still rode up and down the street on a bicycle all the time. "Hi, Bailey," he said to me, really friendly. But there was still something very wrong about him, and I just sniffed at his hand when he offered it to me. "Do you know Bailey?" the girl asked. I wagged at the mention of my name. "We're old pals, aren't we, boy? Good dog." I did not need to be called good dog by someone like Todd. "You don't go to school here. Do you go to East?" Todd asked. "No, I'm just visiting Ethan's family." "What are you, a cousin or something?" The people in the crowd all shouted, and I jerked my head around. But there was nothing happening but more wrestling. It fooled me every time they did that. "No, just a friend."
"So you want a party?" Todd asked her.
"Sorry?"
"Want a party. Some of us are getting together. This game's going nowhere."
"No, I'd better wait for Ethan." I cocked my head at the girl. I could sense her getting anxious for some reason, and I could feel Todd's anger building inside him like it always did.
"Ethan!" Todd turned and spat in the grass. "So are you two a couple or what?"
"Well?"
"'Cause you should know. He's pretty much going out with Michelle Underwood."
"What?"
"Yeah, like everybody knows it."
"Oh."
"Yeah, so if you're thinking, you know, him and you, that's not going to happen."
Todd moved closer to the girl, and when she stiffened, I saw that his hand was touching her shoulder. Her rising tension brought me back to my feet. Todd looked down at me, and we locked eyes, and I felt the fur lifting on the back of my neck. Almost involuntarily, a low growl emerged from deep in my throat.
"Bailey!"
The girl leaped to her feet.
"What's the matter?"
"Yeah, Bailey, it's me, your pal."
He turned to the girl. "I'm Todd, by the way."
"I'm Hannah."
"Why don't you tie up the dog and come with me? It'll be fun."
"No. I couldn't do that."
"Why not? Come on."
"No, I have to take care of Bailey."
Todd shrugged.
He stared at her.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
The force of his anger was so strong, I growled again, and this time the girl didn't say anything to me about it.
Fine, Todd said. You ask Ethan about Michelle, okay?
Yes, okay.
You ask him.
Todd jammed his hands in his pockets and walked away. Ethan was pretty happy and excited when he ran over to see us an hour or so later.
Michigan State, here we come! Spartans! He shouted.
I wagged and barked, and then his happiness went away.
What's the matter, Hannah?
Who is Michelle? I put my paw on Ethan's leg to let him know I was ready to play with the football, if he wanted.
Michelle? Who do you mean?
Ethan laughed. But the laughter stopped after a second, as if he had run out of air.
What's wrong?
They walked me in circles around the big yard, talking. So intently involved in conversation, they didn't notice when I ate a half of a hot dog, some popcorn, and bits of a tuna sandwich. Before long, nearly everyone else had left, but they kept walking around and around.
I don't know this girl, Ethan kept saying. Who did you talk to?
I don't remember his name. He knew Bailey, though.
I froze at my name, wondering if I was going to get in trouble for the candy wrapper I was stealthily eating.
Everybody knows Bailey. He comes to all the games.
I quickly swallowed, but apparently I wasn't in trouble. After another circuit around the big yard, made uninteresting by the fact that I'd pretty much found everything edible, the boy and the girl stopped and hugged. They did that a lot.
You're all sweaty, the girl laughed, pushing him away.
Want to go for a car ride, Bailey? The boy asked.
Of course I did.
We went home, and there was some more quiet talking, and they fed me, and I was content to fall asleep on the living room floor while the girl and the boy wrestled silently together on the couch. We had a new dog door now, from the back door right out into the yard, and no one ever tried to suggest I should have to sleep in the garage anymore. I was glad I broke the family of that habit. I went outside to relieve myself and was astonished to find a piece of meat lying in the grass by the fence. The funny thing was, it didn't smell right. There was a sharp tang to it, an odd bitter odor. Even more strange, Todd's scent was all over it. I picked up the piece of meat and carried it to the back patio, where I dropped it, the bitter taste causing foam in my mouth. Then I sat and looked at it. It was a pretty bad flavor, but then it was a nice hunk of meat. If I chewed it fast enough, I could probably swallow it without tasting it. I poked the meat with my nose. Why, I wondered, did it smell so strongly of Todd?
Chapter 14.
When Mom came outside the next morning and saw me, I hung my head and tapped the patio with just the tip of my tail. For some reason, though I had done nothing wrong, I felt really guilty.
Good morning, Bailey, she said.
Then she saw the meat.
What's that?
When she bent over to look more closely at the meat, I dropped onto my back for a tummy rub. I'd been staring at that piece of meat all night, it seemed, and I was exhausted and needed reassurance I had done the right thing, even if I didn't understand why. There was just something wrong here, and it had prevented me from taking advantage of the free meal.
Where did this come from, Bailey?
Mom stroked my belly lightly, then reached over and picked up the meat.
Ugh,
she said. I sat up alertly. If she was going to feed it to me, it meant it was okay. Instead, she turned away to take it into the house. I rose up on my back legs a little. Now that she was removing it, I'd changed my mind. I wanted to eat it.
Yuck, Bailey, you don't want that, whatever it is, Mom said.
She dropped the meat into the garbage. Hannah sat in my seat for the car ride to the giant silver school buses, and I sat alone in the car for a long time while Ethan and Hannah stood and hugged. When the boy came back to the car, he felt sad and lonely, so I put my head in his lap instead of sticking my nose out the window. The girl came back to visit again the day after the family sat around the indoor tree and tore up papers for Merry Christmas. I was in a bad mood, because Ethan gave Mom a new black-and-white kitten named Felix. He had no manners whatsoever, and attacked my tail when I sat down, and often lunged out at me from behind the couch, batting at me with his tiny paws. When I tried to play with him, he wrapped his legs around my nose and bit me with his sharp teeth. Hannah paid way too much attention to the kitty when she first arrived, though I had known the girl longer and was obviously the favorite pet. Dogs have important jobs, like barking when the doorbell rings, but cats have no function in a house whatsoever. One thing the kitten couldn't do was go outside. The ground was coated with a thick layer of snow, and the one time Felix ventured to put a foot into the stuff, he turned around and ran back into the house as if he'd been burned. So when Hannah and Ethan built a big pile of snow in the front yard and put a hat on it, I was right there with them. The boy liked to tackle me and drag me around in the white stuff, and I let him catch me for the sheer joy of having his arms around me, the way he'd played with me every day when he was younger. When we went sledding, Hannah sat in the back, and I ran alongside the sled, barking and trying to pull the mittens off of the boy's hands. One afternoon, the sun was out, and the air was so cold and clean, I could taste it all the way down my throat. All of the children from the neighborhood were there at the sledding hill, and Hannah and Ethan spent as much time pushing the younger ones as riding themselves. I soon grew tired of running up and down the slope, which was why I was at the bottom when Todd drove up. He looked at me when he got out of the car, but he didn't say anything to me or reach out his hand. I kept my distance.
"Linda, come on, time to come home," he shouted,
his breath whipping out of his mouth in a steamy cloud. Linda was on the slope with three of her little friends, coming down in a saucer-shaped sled at about 1 mile an hour. Ethan and Hannah flashed past them on their sled, laughing.
"I don't want to,"
Linda yelled back.
"Now, Mom says."
Ethan and Hannah came to a halt at the bottom of the hill, tumbling out of their sled. They lay on top of each other, giggling. Todd stood and watched them. Something in Todd came to the surface then. Not anger, exactly, but something worse, something dark. An emotion I'd never felt from anyone before. I felt it in the way he stared at Ethan and Hannah, his face very still. Ethan and the girls stood up, wiping snow off each other, and came over to see Todd, their arms still intertwined. They radiated such love and joy, it blinded them to the hate-filled currents emanating from Todd.
"Hey, Todd."
"Hi." "This is Hannah. Hannah, this is Todd. He lives down the street." Hannah reached her hand out, smiling.
"Nice to meet you," she said.
Todd stiffened a little.
"Actually, we already met."
Hannah cocked her head, wiping hair out of her eyes.
"We did?
When was that?" Ethan asked. "At the football game," Todd said. Then he laughed a short bark. Ethan was shaking his head blankly, but Hannah blinked.
Oh,
right," she said, suddenly subdued.
"What?"
Ethan asked.
"I have to pick up my sister. Linda!"
Todd yelled, cupping his hands.
"Come home now!"
Linda detached herself from her pile of friends and trudged through the snow dejectedly.
He's the one I talked to,"
Hannah told Ethan. Some worry flickered through Hannah, and I glanced at her curiously, then jerked my head at Ethan, when I felt a rising anger from him.
Wait, what? You? Todd, you were the person who told Hannah I'd been with Michelle? I don't even know Michelle.
I gotta go, Todd mumbled.
Get in the car, Linda, he told his sister.
No, wait, Ethan said. He reached his hand out and Todd jerked away from it.
Ethan, Hannah murmured, putting a mitten on his arm.
Why would you do that, Todd? Why would you lie? What's wrong with you, man?
Though the conflicts and emotions boiling through Todd were hot enough to melt the snow we were standing on, he just stood there, staring back at Ethan, not saying a word.
This is why you don't have any friends, Todd. Why can't you just be normal? You're always doing stupid things like this, Ethan said.
It's sick.
The anger was leaving him, but I could feel how upset he was.
Ethan,
Hannah said more sharply. Todd wordlessly got in his car, slamming the door. His face, when he looked back at Hannah and Ethan, was absolutely blank.
That was mean, Hannah said.
Oh, you don't know him.
I don't care, Hannah replied. You shouldn't have said he doesn't have any friends.
Well, he doesn't. He's always doing stuff like when he said this one guy stole his transistor radio. The whole thing was a lie.
He's not... There's something different about him, right? Like, is he in special education?
Oh, no. He's really smart. That's not it. He's just Todd, that's all. He's always been twisted, you know? We used to be friends when we were kids. But he had all these weird ideas for what was fun, like throwing eggs at the preschoolers when they were waiting for the van to summer school. I told him I didn't want to do it. His own sister was one of the kids. I mean, come on. And so he just stomped on the carton of eggs he'd brought over. Made a mess in my driveway that I had to hose off before my dad got home. Bailey liked that part, though. I wagged at my name, glad to think we might be talking about me now.
I'll bet he did,
Hannah laughed, reaching down and petting me. A few days after Hannah left, the snow came down, and the wind blew so hard that we stayed inside all day, sitting in front of the heater. At least that's what I did. That night, I slept under the covers of Ethan's bed and stayed there even when I got so hot I panted, just because it was so wonderful to be pressed up against him like when I was a puppy. The next morning, the snow finally stopped, and Ethan and I went outside and dug for hours in the driveway. Running in that deep, heavy snow was tough going, and I would leap ahead for only a few feet before needing to stop and rest. The moon came out right after dinner, so bright that I could see really well, and the air was thick with the fragrance of fireplace smoke. Ethan was tired and went to bed early, but I went out the dog door and stood in the yard, my nose to the faint breeze, galvanized by the exotic light and crisp night air. When I discovered that the snow had drifted in a huge pile against the fence, I was delighted to climb right up to the top of the mound and drop over the other side. It was a perfect night for an adventure. I went over to Chelsea's house to see if Duchess was available, but there was no sign other than a fairly recent patch of urine-soaked snow. I thoughtfully lifted my leg on the area so she'd know I was thinking of her. Normally, when I went out for a little nighttime exploration, I ventured along the creek. It reminded me of hunting with Sister and Fast when I was a wild puppy, and the smells were always exciting. Now, though, I was forced to stick to the plowed roads, turning up driveways that were clear to sniff at the cracks between garage doors and the pavement. Some people had already dragged their indoor trees outside, though at Ethan's house it still stood in the front window, with objects and lights hanging from it for Felix to attack. When I came across the indoor trees lying in the plowed driveways, I marked them with my scent, and it was this, the seemingly endless procession of trees to tag, that kept me out so late.
If it hadn't been for the scent of yet another misplaced tree luring me onward, I would have returned back home, and maybe would have arrived in time to prevent what happened. Finally, I was caught square in the headlights of a passing car, and it slowed for a minute, and the smell of it reminded me of Mom's car whenever she and Ethan came looking for me when I'd been out too long on an adventure, and I felt a quick stab of guilt. I lowered my head and trotted back home. Turning up the shoveled sidewalk, I was struck by several things at once, all of them wrong. The front door was open, and the aroma of home was wafting out in great gusts, propelled into the frosty night air by the force of the furnace. Riding on the currents of that air was a chemical smell, both sharp and familiar. I smelled it whenever we went for a car ride and stopped at the place where Ethan liked to stand by the back of the car with a thick black hose.